Like when a tragedy strikes, there are people who get affected by it, some directly, some indirectly. Should we be bothered that pariksha ka time hai, like what has been taken an examination? And at that moment, should we try to help those people or should we just turn towards God and say, okay, like, what is it? Or should we go hand in hand? I mean, that's a trial moment.
No, your question is a very complex question. Let us analyze different aspects of it. First of all, you say a tragedy has occurred. And what should be our attitude towards it? How should we understand it? So far, I have said that when a tragedy occurs, it means that there was somewhere a refusal. Somewhere in the situation, there was a refusal which was blocking the way towards a higher perfection. This is the answer that I have given so far. Now, the concept that you are introducing is the ordinary notion which is very often expressed, that when a tragedy occurs, think that God was examining me. And further, perhaps, that you fail in the examination, or the people concerned fail in the examination, and therefore the blow came. This is one way by which people try to explain a tragedy. My first question is, does God ever punish? Does God ever examine? Does God need to examine? And my answer to all the three questions is no. Fundamentally, there is no such thing as punishment in the scheme of the world. It is we human beings who are in our narrow consciousness so limited that we, in our own life, we think of reward and punishment, which is very for our ordinary consciousness. But that is not the part of the design of the universe, which is the design of the Supreme God. If you touch fire, it burns you. Is it punishment that fire gives you? Or is it an experience that is given by fire, that look, my nature is to burn. If you put your hand into it, it will burn. It's not a punishment. So one can visualize the whole world in a different way, in which you can say that the world is a field of experience, not of rewards and punishment, but field of experience. Secondly, God does not require to examine you because He is all-knowing. He knows what you are. He doesn't want to take examination to find out what you are. Not like a class teacher who doesn't know what the students are doing. So He needs to examine. God knows exactly what you are, where you are, what you are capable of. And from God's point of view, as He is ruling the world, He wants you to grow and wants you to surmount the difficulties, and He is prepared to give you the help. But if you refuse, then there is a law that God has made. This whole world has a design, and one of the aspects of the design of the world is that there is a rule that God has made that He will not impose on you what He wills for you. He can suggest you, He can help you, He can reveal to you what He wants, but He does not impose on you such an extent that if you refuse, you still say, still I push you. This is the one aspect of the design of the world. So it is only in the circumstance of a refusal that in spite of whatever God does to you, and you can see that before a tragedy occurs, if you look in the inner life, there would have been warning, help coming up, experiences of great kindness of a certain kind would have also come in your life. And still you refuse, As I said, then only there is a mild experience of a breakdown, which you call tragedy. So this is my second answer. God does not need to examine you, but wants to help you all the time. But this help has only one important condition, that help is not imposed. That is where the human being has to rise to a point where he can receive the help, he can demand the help when he wants the help. But when you refuse it altogether, say, I don't want your help.
Isn't that true for human beings in the relationship, that no help can be imposed on anyone?
That is the rightest way of doing it, actually. Because that is the law of this world. You can suggest, you can try to help, but you should not impose. And that is why one of the most important doctrines of education is that you lead the child by suggesting, by helping, by uplifting, but not imposing.
It's like a hurdle race.
Pardon?
It's like a hurdle race.
Hurdle race. That's right.
We have to be hurdle in front of us.
Yes, quite true. Very true. Very true. Very true. So in this hurdle, this is the only hurdle in which the human will has a role to play.
As big as we imagine.
Huh?
It's as big as we imagine.
Yes. So this is the second point. The third point is that there is in this world something like examination. Not from God. But there is something like examination, the scheme of the world. Examination from those who are powerful but who are not in possession of knowledge. There are human beings in this world. In the situation of anybody, you will find, in a given situation, there will be around you some more powerful person than you are. But more powerful persons who do not know, who don't have the capacity of knowledge. They have power, but not the knowledge. A money lender may have the power to give you the money, but he does not know what you are and how he should give the money to you. He does not know. Like Shylock, he would be a capable money lender, but he would not know what exactly is the meaning of his money, how money can be used rightly, and to whom it has to be given, and what is the character of the man to whom he gives. And he may have also some adverse notions or enmities regarding the individual to whom the help is to be rendered. It is in their hands, therefore, that the role of examiner is given. They are the examiners. So there is an examination somewhere. It's not God who is examining. It is these forces which are constantly examining. So we are in the examination hall, all of us, where examiners are not God, not representatives of God. They are those who have the power, but not the wisdom.
And how are they to be dealt with?
Her mother has answered by utter humility. Be extremely humble and do not spare in your introspection. Because these people have one power to strike exactly where you are weakest. When you are in presence of these forces around you, you are in the examination, then you go inward.
Yourself.
Introspection. And see where you are really weak. It is there that the arrow of the examiner will strike you.
Supporting by Othello.
Take the example of Othello. Iago was the examiner of the true love between Othello and Desdemona. He found out the weak point of Othello. That his love for Desdemona is so extreme that he can be touched very easily on that ground in regard to the relationship between him and Desdemona. He is capable of suspicion. His love is not, he's great, tremendous, but not so great that it can resist any possibility of doubt. That was his great weakness. If he really loved her that much, if he really knew her that much, no doubt could have melted him. Iago would have failed. Tragedy would not have occurred. So there was in him that great weakness, that it was love. But there was a great want in it. It was not that perfect love in which love and trust would be automatic. Where there is still a division between love and trust, the two psychological elements are not united. In fact, the greatest tragedies of life are because certain important elements are not united. This is what Sri Aurobindo calls a division in our psychological being. The varieties of divisions. Where there is knowledge, there is not strength. Where there is strength, there is not knowledge. Where there is knowledge, but no love. Where there is love, there is no knowledge. Where there is love, but no capacity of service. You may love somebody, but you are not capable of serving. What can you do? You can't express your love properly. Very often, love requires to be expressed in terms of service that you can render. Now, you may have love, but you do not know how to serve. You have no means of serving. You may have the means of service, but you may not have the love. These are the divisions. Therefore, you need to go within and find out where the cleavages exist in our own consciousness. And if you can work on those cleavages, those divisions, then you can pass the examination. But if you can't, and not only if you can't, we refuse, and there is a further condition, we even refuse either to see within ourselves or to repair ourselves or to receive the help. There is a beautiful statement, a short statement of Sri Aurobindo called the Hour of God. And there Sri Aurobindo says, in the Hour of God, look thyself into thee pitilessly. A chunk in thy armor, which at one time was thy protection, will now become the hole through which you'll be struck. When there is an hour of God, a very important moment of your life, there pitilessly look into yourself. Normally when we introspect ourselves, we try to justify ourselves as much as possible. Or even if we don't justify ourselves, we say it is human nature. What can I do? After all, I'm justified in doing it. I couldn't help it. I'm after all such a small person. What can I do? I'm not a great person. So I try to excuse myself to the extent to which I can. This is our normal psychology. That is why Sri Aurobindo says, look into thee pitilessly. Don't have pity at all. Take Arjuna, for example, when he stood at the battlefield, what is the rebuke that Sri Krishna gives to Arjuna? That you are overcome by pity. You are saying, what can I do? I am a small, ordinary human being here called upon to kill my brethren and my sires and my gurus. What can I do? Therefore, Sri Krishna says, Klebhyam, he says, do not be overcome by your weakness. Stand up, you are a hero. Look within thyself. And because he did not refuse the help, he says, Shadimam, he agreed. Therefore, the tragedy did not come. Otherwise, Sri Krishna had said that if you run away, you'll run away, but you'll come back here, and when you come back, it will be a great inglorious moment for you. It would have been a tragedy for him. But he could avoid the tragedy because fortunately he had Sri Krishna by his side.
In my heart he was in the sharan.
And he accepted at that time. First of all, he did not. He simply threw away the vow. It was afterwards that he said, Shadi Mam.
That's right.
Correct. Absolutely. But this symbolic event of Arjuna and Krishna shows that actually for each one, Sri Krishna is our charioteer, always present. It is not as if Arjuna was specially privileged to have Sri Krishna by his side. That privilege is given to every one of us. Only we do not know that Sri Krishna is our charioteer. And if you have a problem, you turn to him. And abhyasena, parityagena, parisevaya, go on. Even pariprasnena, you ask questions again and again, you do seva again and again, and if you go on doing it, and constantly say shadimam, the answer will be available. This is the promise of God. The symbolism that is in Arjuna's situation is present everywhere. This is a real fact of the world. This is the design of the world. The divine is not examining you. Sri Krishna was not examining Arjuna. Now what is he doing? Not at all. He knew Arjuna's pity of self-pity and cowardice and all that. He knew. And he was ready to help, to uplift him.
That also is true.
It is true, but actually, you know, many people point out your weaknesses also out of many other reasons. That's why one has to find out. First of all, the guide is yourself, is within you, so God. Not yourself, but God within you. And if you are really sincere, if you really knock, the door will be opened. Or God will take you to somebody who can really give you the right advice. Because that is a real fact. The design of the world is of that kind. If tragedy occurs, as in the case of Othello, as I told you, that in spite of his great love for Desdemona, which cannot be questioned, but that love was not capable of bridging love and trust. There was some
love and trust are bridged with the white love.
Yes, absolutely. That is the point. Red love goes away when the two are combined together. Precisely, that becomes a white love. The white flame of love, where there is no question at all. It is the trust will never be broken. It is unbreakable. Even though so many things may happen around you. Even illusions can be created around you. People can give you the full proofs. And yet you say, no, this is not true. This is the capacity of true love. So this is the second part of the answer. And the third is that although in tragedy we always find some cruel hand, fundamentally, we have to discover the nectar which is flowing in that end. Whatever happens, we must really see that there is a great boon which is being showered on you. Mother once said that when the greatest calamity is on you, realize that divine is showering his grace. Normally we complain, why this? But that is from the divine point of view, it is because there has been in your being some kind of a refusal. Even then, the divine grace is continuing. It even becomes greater and greater. Therefore, when there is a great calamity, realize that the divine is behind you to shower his grace on you. And therefore, if you take it in that way, Sri Aurobindo says that all things can be turned into honey. All things, every situation. Such is the design of the world. There is no situation in the world which you cannot turn into honey. It's a question of how you handle it, how you take it, how you receive it, how you reach God. In fact, one of the easiest things is to say to yourself that whatever is happening, be sure that God is aware of it minutely. That is the first thing that we must know, that God knows your situation minutely in every detail. We normally think that, oh, God is looking after the whole world. I am such a small little thing. What does he know about me? Or even if he knows, it is in general way he knows. But the point is that his omniscience is so great and it is so full of love that he is present and knows you thoroughly. He also knows how to bring you out of your difficulty. He is constantly telling you how to come out. Only your ears are sealed. There is some kind of refusal. So what you are demanded of on from your part is to remove your refusal. Therefore, first thing is to turn to the divine with absolute confidence that God knows you thoroughly well, that he loves you immensely. There is no higher love and lesser love for God. God is Samam Brahma. He is present everywhere with equal love for everybody. You are dearest to him, like everybody else also dearest to him. There are no degrees there. Everyone is dearest to God. That he wants to help you. With this confidence, you turn to him and really tell him, you know all that I am. You have intention of telling me something. Open my ears, open my eyes, open my heart. And all my refusals, I sacrifice.
Complete surrender.
That was the Vedic way. The Veda instituted the idea of sacrifice for this reason. That the way by which you can cross the examinations of life, the tribulations of life, there's only one way. The sacrifice of your refusal. And you say, idam na mama. I offer this, idam na mama. This is not mine. This is the way, it is a path. That is why Agni is also called Adhvaraha. Adhva means a path. So Agni is the leader of the path. He himself travels with you. So agree to travel. Very often we refuse to travel. We give lots of excuses. Oh, I am now tired. I don't want to move forward. I don't want to do it. Therefore, there is a kind of a resistance. Therefore, offer it all and there will be upliftment. Agni will take you. Agni is a form of God himself. And God will therefore take you forward. In any case, the right attitude is never to complain. Our human consciousness is in a habit of complaining and justifying our complaint under so many grounds. As mother once said, never complain. Execute. There is a divine will, execute it. Don't complain. You have got strength. Do not dream, realize. This is the design of the world. Therefore, the ordinary and gross ideas of God's punishments, rewarding, this, etc., are all very lower types of explanations. They do not correspond to the real reality and therefore they can't even explain to you. If a small child of 5 years is crushed under the car, what is the punishment there? Had he committed some great crime that this is being punished? It happens. So often it happens. Why does it happen? So only by the idea of reward punishment, the design of the world can't be explained. You can't even say that in the past birth he had done so many crimes that now he has been now crushed under the car. Even this explanation would mean Supposing there is a virtuous man and he is in this life having a very great poverty like Sudama, where he doesn't have even food to give to his children. Does it mean that in his past birth he was a criminal and suddenly in this birth he has become a great saint? Has he evolved so much that in one birth he has now suddenly become a saint, but he is now suffering for the crimes that he has done in his previous life? That is not the system of life. Every experience of the world is to be measured in terms of experience it gives. Whatever happens, every event has a message in terms of experience. As I told you about putting your finger in the fire, it burns. It's not a punishment of fire. It gives you experience that if you do this, this will be the consequence. Such is the world.
The medals and themes for Dharma and Sadhava are
here. Our life is normally not punctuated by great events. Our life is normally a humdrum life. There is a very slow and leisurely movement, basically. That is also part of the design of life. You are never given a work which is beyond your capacity. This is also part of the design of life. You are never given a problem which is beyond your capacity. It may not be within your immediate inclination, your immediate chiseling of your capacity, but it is within your capacity. And when you are not capable, sufficient time is given to chisel yourself. So that is why in a certain sense you might say that there is an aspect of the world movement in which everybody is given a time frame. There is what you may call the law of the cycle of time, rhythm of time. Time is a great conscious leader. If you examine the movements of time, you will find that exactly at the right moment, the right thing happens. This you notice sometimes in great moments. Now, unless the time movement was wise, if time was not conscious of the entirety of the web of life, of the whole world, time would not be at the right moment, at the right place. There is a great movement of time which is very conscious. And therefore, it measures the development of your soul. You are here on this earth and you are surrounded by lots of incapacities. Every one of us is surrounded with lots of incapacities, outer and inner. And the soul of man is surrounded by these incapacities. And the problem of the soul is that by its power to create capacities and to overcome the incapacities, and time provides you the sufficient time to overcome this. Therefore, you might say in a certain sense that there is an aspect of life where you can watch the world, and you might even say that there is a leisurely movement of time in the world. Our sense of hurry, haste, immediacy is our incapacity to see this leisurely aspect of time. There's another aspect of time also, where the time is fleeting very fast, rapidly. There is also another aspect of time. There is impetuosity of time. That also is another aspect of time. That is why Sri Krishna in the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he shows the time vision to Arjuna. And what kind of time, time the death, time the destroyer, that is that aspect of time that is shown in that Visharupa Darshan. But just now I am talking to you of the other aspect of time, where you might say that time in a certain state of your consciousness can be seen to be leisure. For example, when I am talking to you, I have a sense of great leisure just now. There is no pressure of time, and I am taking my full time, as it were, without any hurry whatsoever. This is also an aspect. Now, the reason why I am making this long preface to your question is that I wanted to explain the idea of duty, idea of svabhava, and idea of svadharma. But this is a preface for it. That is why I took so much time to explain, first of all, the movement of time. It is in the movement of time that duty, svabhava, svadharma have relevance. Everyone is given time to work out from his soul manifestation of that much energy by which the incapacities of his own inner life and body and of his outer life and outer body and outer circumstances can be remedied. Now, the important point therefore is relationship between the soul and the outer capacities or incapacities. This is the fundamental problem of man. Every human being has these two undeniable facts, himself or herself and the circumstance, totality of circumstance, including his inner body, outer body, outer circumstances, everything taken together. That is on one side. On the other side is his soul. Now the question is, how to deal with this circumstance is a one big blank before us, normally. We do not have normally an understanding of how to deal with what we have to deal with. Civilization in which we live has fortunately put at our disposal certain normal conditions by which some guidance is given by the facilities which are provided to you in a given civilization. That is the accumulated result of ages of experience. I need to study in a school and my civilization provides a motor car for me to go from my house to my school. If you are born in a rich family, that is a civilization has provided you this facility. So in that sense, you might say several conditions are provided to you. So very often you don't even ask the question as to how am I to deal with my circumstances. Civilization very often provides you ready circumstances, ready facilities by which you are enabled to move forward. But the time comes when civilizational facilities are exhausted. And you are face to face with a situation where civilizational facilities are now no more available to you. Or if they are available, not to the degree to which you need.
Well, does the situation come because of a thinking mind also?
Yes, quite true. The situation arises which is appropriate to what you have to do. Every situation in your life is correspondent to the soul that is there which has to deal with this. So you might rightly say that your circumstance is appropriate to what you think. But now the question is, how do you think, what do you think, and are there alternative ways of thinking? It is here that civilization has provided you with the idea of beauty. The idea of beauty is basically an idea given by civilization, just as a car is given to you. Similarly, the idea of beauty is also given to you by civilization. You are told that as a student, your duty is to learn. It's a duty. It's an easy way by which the child is incited to study, saying that your duty is to study. And you are supposed to do your duty. Child understands it in his own way and goes on doing it. It's a ready facility given to him. Now, civilizational helps are only temporary. A time comes when even this idea of beauty at a given time is not able to help you. It helps you to some extent, to a certain degree. Once again, let us take the example of Arjuna. Arjuna is a soul around whom an entire situation of the army and the war is presented. He has many capacities, many incapacities, even whatever he is now confronted with a huge army of a certain kind, with various complexities. He came to the battlefield because the civilization had helped him. It was duty for him to fight. It was a civilizational help. It was told that Kshatriya, being born a Kshatriya, the civilization in which he lived, told him that if he is confronted by a duty to fight, he must fight. He was also told that if an injustice is going to be perpetuated, as a Kshatriya, it is his duty to break injustice and to establish the kingdom of justice. It was his duty. Now, with this idea, he had come to the battlefield. Duty, the sense of duty had helped him to come there. He had already debated with hundreds of people in his lifetime whether this was his real duty or not. And throughout the whole education that he was given, he had come to the conclusion that yes, this was his duty. Even when he comes to the battlefield, he comes in a state of pride, like a warrior, a pride which is natural to a warrior who wants to fight for the sake of righteousness. And it is proudly that he says to Krishna, draw the chariot now, so that I can see very clearly all the great warriors whom I have to confront. He had complete idea of his duty, and he had come with that sense of duty, and he knew his capacities, and he wanted to confront the circumstance with whatever power he had. He wanted to be victorious, and he knew he would be victorious. At least he believed. Now, suddenly, certain questions arise at that moment in his mind, which perhaps had not arisen so sharply, even though they might have arisen, but not so sharply as they arose now. And analyze the question, since you raise the question of duty, is very important. He knew it was his duty to fight. He knew that he was going to fight with his brothers, relatives, even his teachers, his grandfather. He knew already. And yet, the sharpness with which these very questions now come to him and grip him is to be examined. Why has this happened? What is it? And see the arguments that he makes. Every statement that he makes is worth examining in detail under microscope. Sometime we shall discuss each argument one day, but the ultimate shock is the following. You must not kill is also a duty. You must fight is a duty. You must not kill is also a duty. Now civilization had not given him an answer to the question when two duties collide. And the tragedy that he was facing was this, that he had not an answer to this question when two important duties at the same time sharply together, they come together. How are you to resolve it? It is not that he forgot his duty. Very often it is said that Arjuna forgot his duty when he came and stood before his brothers and his teachers and others. And then Krishna reminded him of his duty, and that was the end of his tragedy. Not at all. He knew his duty very well. He explains his duty. He knows that this is a duty. But he is now confronted with another duty. The duty which had not come sharply to him in earlier time. And when he is about to act, this duty confronts him. And he is not able to answer this question. Duties in general give you sufficient guidance in life. But the insufficiency of the idea of duty is that you are confronted sometimes with duties which are all imperative and yet they are in conflict with each other. How often do we find that love and duty conflict with each other?
This is where the conflict is.
When you have on one side love, on the other side a certain obligation, how do we reconcile the two? We have a big problem. If you read the drama of Ibsen, Bull's House, I don't know if you have seen. One day you can read this drama. There also a similar dilemma is presented by Ibsen. When two duties, both of them imperative, impose themselves on you, and yet, both are in conflict with each other. What is to be done? It is to this question that Arjuna has no answer. And all the arguments are woven around this question. The entire Gita can be studied best when we understand that the fundamental question was conflict between two duties. And we are not able to answer. Now comes the question of swabhava. There is something deeper than duty, and that is swabhava. And from the swabhava arises swadharma.
Swabhava is temperament.
Is deeper than temperament. Temperament is an outer expression of your swabhava. But the inner is your soul, its line of development. Every soul has a certain line of development. You might say that every soul is given one task from above. Each one of us, before coming here, has made a contract with God, saying, I am here on the earth and I will be doing this work. The need of that work constitutes your swabhava. If you have decided in the battlefield of Rama, your function is to throw a stone in the sea, in the building of a bridge, then that will be a part of your swabhava, so that at the right moment, you will be able to do it.
So, but what is the swabhava of lesser mortals like us?
Which one of us has got this? We are not lesser mortals in the eyes of God.
No, but still, I really wonder at times that, just to bring up a party or tell us the right thinking is very much less, I suppose, which we...
No, not at all. Not at all.
But then, ultimately, doesn't the
Swadharma... We are given the charge of Divine's dearest child.
Of course, in a way that it can put it like that.
Therefore, it is not a lesser task. It depends upon how we take it. Every task that is given to us is a very important task. It has something to do with our development of the soul. So the task that we are required to do, all that we are doing is only an accidental, you might say, circumstantial work now. Through that you are being prepared.
So the one ultimate task of
all the task, the task that you are ready to do. And that task is not one single pointed task. It is itself a multiple complex of tasks. You might say in a sense, Arjuna was born to create a condition by which the kingdom of Yudhishthira can be established. It's one definition. But for doing it, how many activities are involved in it?
Each one of us has a mission in
life. Everyone is given a
mission.
This is the basic question of life. And what we are doing now is a part of it.
So, but Uncle, to the last point, isn't it just discovering ourselves the only task that ultimately...
No, sir, what do we mean by knowing ourselves?
This
is only a word, knowing ourselves, but what is ourselves? So I'm saying that ourselves, first of all, consists of a power which has the capacity of dealing with its circumstances. This is the basic knowledge that we have to have. That everyone is given circumstances which are appropriate to his present stage of development. And we have to deal with that. And there's a capacity for this. Therefore, when you look into yourself, you have to ask yourself, what is the capacity I have? How am I to express it? The automatic and natural expression of that capacity is what is called Svabhava. Sva is the soul, Bhava is the becoming. The becoming of your soul is Svabhava. The natural becoming of your soul is your Svabhava. Your outer nature may not be appropriate to it. That is, a mere temperament is not your Svabhava. You have to go within and to find out. Now this Svabhava, if you discover it, then you will find that it has a certain rhythm of development. Bhava is becoming, Sva is self, self-becoming. Now self-becoming is a process. Now every process has a rhythm of development. You look in the world everywhere, the speciality of the design of the world is that every becoming has a rhythm. The childbirth requires 9 months of rhythm of ripening in the embryo. It's a rhythm. A flower can flower at a certain time. A fruit is born at a certain time. When there is a rhythm in this world, the seed constantly goes up and down. It's a rhythm. So, your development of the self, your soul becoming, has also a rhythm. That rhythm is called the law. For that one. Law is the meaning of the word dharma. So the law of the becoming, the law of the rhythm of your becoming, becoming of yourself, is also dharma. If there is a becoming of the nation, it is called Rashtra Dharma. If it is the rhythm of the Yuga, it is Yuga Dharma. But for you particularly, your way of development is specific to you. Therefore, the law of your becoming is called Swadharma, which will be appropriate to your Svabhava. Now the duty is given by civilization. And there will be defects in the idea of duty. This is why Sri Krishna first of all tells Arjuna, do not bother about what civilization tells. That is one of the ways by which Krishna answers the question of Arjuna. That you are in a conflict because you are conflicted with two beauties, both of which are given by civilization. So when you are in conflict with this, how will you resolve it? Go beyond the civilization in which you are living. Go to the more fundamental thing. Discover yourself, your true self. Why Sri Krishna was obliged to give metaphysical answers? It was not because he was very fond of giving long lectures. It was a necessity. Unless he did it, he could not have answered this question. The question was such that the necessity of knowing soul was imperative. He had to tell him that there is something like a soul, that it has a certain function, certain mission, that you have to have the knowledge of that mission. According to that mission, your swabhava is constituted. And there is a dharma which follows that swabhava, which will be quite different from the ideas of duties in which you are involved now. So first of all, Sri Krishna explains what is the soul. And you can't explain the soul without telling that soul is a child of God. So we have to say what is God. So we have to explain what is Purushottama, what is Paraprakriti, what is the relationship of that with Jiva. All that we have to explain, it was a necessity of answering the question. Without it, how could you explain what is Tobhava? How could you have lifted him from this civilizational ideas of duties? It could not have been possible. So having done it, then Sri Krishna explains the Swabhava in detail and speaks of Swabhava of so many things. The whole Vibhuti Yoga, the whole chapter is given where the Swabhava of various things in the world are explained. Then he brings the idea of Dharma and Swadharma. Dharma may be valid for the society in a large way, in a general way. But Swadharma is even much more important. To such an extent, Swadharma is Idanam Shreya, Varadharma Bhayava. Varadharma is also Dharma. But for you, what is necessary is that even if you are going to die while performing your Dharma, it is better than following somebody else's Dharma. This knowledge is very important before you decide this question of conflict of duties. Therefore, for you, do not go to the civilizational ideas of duties. Transcend them. For ordinary life, for the leisurely life of your development is alright. But a point comes when you have to go into depth. Duty is only a crutch for a lame man. A time must come when you will be cured and you will stand erect. When crutches are to be given up. That can happen only when you know yourself, your becoming of yourself and the law of the rhythm of your becoming. In that knowledge, you will know what is your real mission. And that is why Vishwarup Darshan was a necessary part of this teaching, in which Sri Krishna has to explain, look, your role in this world. By your swabhava, by your swadharma, you have reached this point. And this is your mission of your life. It's a part of your life, your function. Not your duty now anymore. Sri Krishna doesn't say this is your duty now. This is your mission, this is the part of your swadharma. When you meet that point, there is a further light that Sri Krishna gives and says that a time comes when you have to give up all dharmas. Not only duties, not only dharmas, even swadharma. Because even swadharma is a kind of a development on a limited staircase. But a time comes when your staircase becomes as wide as the sky. Because that is your real soul who is going to embrace the Supreme Divine. Therefore, to reach and embrace the Supreme Divine, your soul, which was moving on a narrow path, has to become a huge, vast path. Vidasya Pantha. the path of the truth. Ritasya pantha. And what is the truth? Satyam ritam brihat. It is the path of the truth, the right and the vast. Therefore, when you read the vast, then even the swadharma, all dharmas are surrendered. And this is the final answer to this question. Do not think of duties. It's a moral idea. You can't find a solution in that state of consciousness. Don't look at dharma. Do not look at even swabhava, swadharma. Give yourself entirely. In the vastness, do what the divine tells you. That is what you have to do. It is not your duty to fight. Sri Krishna's answer to the question of Arjuna is not, it is your duty to fight, therefore fight. No. It is divine's will that you should fight. Therefore fight. Pardon? Divine's will. There is a will of God that He wants you to be the instrument of His will, and His will is to fight. And that is what He shows in Vishwarupa Darshan. The Kauravas are all killed already in that vision. That is the divine's will, that these are all to be eliminated. To find out the divine's will and to follow it by utter surrender. Sarvadharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. You find yourself, do not be bound by any ideas, duties, everything is to be thrown away. You are all good things as a crutch, as a staircase at a certain point. But these are not binding on the soul. The only way by which you can decide your real action is to ask, what is the contract I have made with God? And what is His will in you? What He wills in you? And be His channel. Nimitta matram bhava. You only become His instrument. It is at that level that Sri Krishna answers the question of Arjuna. And this question cannot be answered otherwise at all, unless you explain all this. Otherwise one could have said, Sri Krishna should have told him, you just do it. But Arjuna's question would not have been satisfied. His question, his mind would not have been washed until this long explanation is given. So real knowledge is to be given at a critical moment, which Sri Krishna gave to him, as a result of which he says, Moha Nashta, my all delusion is gone, my doubts have gone, and now I am prepared to do it. That was the stage at which he could answer his question.
And you also said that Sadhya
Muni also has
a letter.
And yes, sir,
that
letter is also not
required.
Right, right.
So your own mind is to be
fed
with the vast.
Vast.
So,
and when the vast expresses through you.
For this, what should one practice?
What he says, Sarvadharman Praikvetya, do not be bound by ideas of duty and so on. Pardon?
And then thinking on coming to you automatically, and you're part of working with you.
Automatically is a very important word, and I have a little qualification. It will come automatically when the surrender will be complete. Not that when you start surrendering. When you start surrendering, things will not come automatically. As you grow more and more, then it will become more and more automatic. Therefore, one is very vigilant. During the process, therefore, you have to have threefold idea. One is to give your hand to God. You don't even know where God is, what God is. You just give your hand to God, saying, look, you know me, I do not know you. This is a fact. I am just lifting my hand, and you know how to catch me? You will catch my hands. But by saying this, you are not really giving your hand. You are only saying this. Therefore, strive to give constantly. Don't say that I already told once and that will be alright. It will be alright. You have to constantly, in every circumstance, in every being, in every little action, this has to be a constant attitude of yours. One of it. By giving one hand, you are not giving entirely yourself, as at the same time, you of which you are not even capable. Therefore, out of the other parts of the being, many kinds of things will be happening. Now, these things are happening because I am still at the level of duty, I am at the level of svabhava, level of sadharma, and many, many complications are still there. So you are still acting at the same time. You can't simply silently sit until I is a God will. It will not happen like that. Even if you sit down, you will come back again to action. Well, Arjuna was told that even if you run away from the battlefield, you will come back. Because our own nature is such that you bring back to your field of action. Therefore, while acting, Sri Krishna says, what is to be done? First of all, examine all your activities. Take a very comprehensive view of all your activities. Introspection is the most important element in any upward movement. You have to carry your microscope in your own mind so that every time you don't examine yourself. Then, find out in this entirety of your being, what are your desires? That is one of the levers of your search. Find out what are your desires. Make a list of all of them. These are my desires. Meticulously. If something to yourself, therefore you can be quite...
You can be very honest.
Pardon?
You should be very honest.
Quite honest. Meticulously you can do it. These are my desires. Fine. Then Sri Krishna says that my first suggestion to you is that out of desires you are doing many actions. So many of your activities are results of your desires. Fine. Continue those actions. But make one difference. You are seeking certain fruits out of your actions. Seek those fruits, desire those fruits, but don't claim them. That's the first difference you make. Do not claim them. So the first change that you have to make is to give the claim to the fruits. That's why Sri Krishna says, karmanyeva adhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana. Adhikar is a claim. Don't claim the fruits. Even when you seek the fruits, don't claim the fruits. Secondly, do not even seek the fruits. Continue your action, but don't seek the fruits. Whatever fruits come, you offer to God. They are not yours. There's a second step. Thirdly, you cut the desire itself. While continuing action, cut off the desire, which is a very, very difficult operation. Normally, when you give up the desire, action also falls at the same time. Continue the action, but drop the desire. At the same time, you will find that with every desire, a thread is always attached. I am the doer, I am the doer. Aham kartasmi, I am the doer. Weaken this thread and see that you are not really the doer. What is all here is only a cog in the vast machine of the whole world. It is like a dog which runs under a cart and thinks that the cart is moving because of his running. The dog does not know that there are bulls which are carrying the cart. And the cart is running because of the bulls. But because it is running, it feels that the cart is moving because it is running. So realize that this is your condition of your doership. So use on this thread. Ultimately see the vastness of the whole universe. When you find that even bulls are running and pulling the cart, even they themselves are results of another action. And you go on until you find out that behind this prakriti the whole universal machine, there is para prakriti and mava prakriti, and the source of higher prakriti is Supreme Purushottama himself. Therefore, the real dual is the Purushottama. So realize that Purushottama is the real one. So all these practices you do, while one hand is already given to God, which you will be taking care, that at the same time you do this, it's a long practice. And at every moment, wherever you can raise your hand, you have many hands, not only two hands. For every action you have a hand, every action is your hand actually. So lift every possible hand and we go on giving to God. Until you realize that actual real dual is He. Then the strain of giving to God will cease. Once you know that He is the doer, then the strain that you are feeling in giving yourself to God will also become mitigated. It will become effortless. Then will come automatic. Then at that stage you can say, now what is to happen will happen automatically. Till that time, let there not be this idea, it will happen automatically. There will be greater help, greater automaticity, but not that automaticity saying that all that happens now will happen according to God's will. That is a wrong idea. But once I told God, take me in your hands, and then everything will happen according to God's will. That is not true. Until you reach this point, when your entire being now is in hands of God, with His luminosity, not only saying to God, but by now you have now realized what God is, because you have gained so much of experience, giving up the desires for the fruits of action, giving up the desire itself, giving up the doership, and then finding the universal prakriti, finding out the para prakriti, finding out the source of para prakriti, the Purushottama. By the time you reach that point, you have gained lot of experiences. Then your surrender becomes very complete. Then whatever He wants will happen automatically.
Remember, what you're saying, there are certain, I would say sects or certain persons which are preaching that you just surrender to us, the rest will be done. So they are justified in what they are saying.
I have given you the answer now. I don't want to criticize only that way. It helps many people. See, sir, it helps some people.
It helps some people
at a certain stage, but that is, if you really want the true help, you must go to Shri Krishna.
And Nelson Sartre is saying that the chain of karma never stops. Maybe a stage will come when that automatically comes, but still man is doing his karma. And like poor family surrender and then leave the karma, then...
The chain of karma, when that chain is tied to the divine's will, then what will happen is that that chain will continue, but you will be free from it. Because then the chain will be tied to God.
And the aham bhava will go away.
That's right. So that chain will be broken.
But to tie the chain, there's no surrender
to God. Karma will continue. All this, as I said, all this is necessary. It's a long process of karma yoga is necessary.
And one gets tired and again one gets...
But at the same time, God also comes to you so much.
So many ways.
Yes, that's true.
In a word of friends or something you need, something you need a couple of times.
But then maybe so in the one way, just pick up that question directly. All right. Very fine.
Oh, very interesting. That feeling yourself bond is the entire being in
the
universe. The love for everything comes to be there. There should be love for...
No, but not the ordinary love. You know, very often when this expression is used, our idea of love itself is limited. It is not the kind of love that we now normally experience. This is the kind of love that is involved in universal love. So, I wouldn't say yes immediately to your question. true, one has to have universal love. And that's right.
That way.
Yeah, that's all right. That is good.
When you start feeling and experiencing that way, then it's
quite true. Although there are many degrees and many levels, Deepika, you want to ask something?
Something about you which you know is wrong, and it's like your temperamental nature. You are very aware of it and you want to get out of it, but then you come back to it. Today you just say that, okay, I won't do it again. But then tomorrow or just 5 minutes later, again you do the same thing. How does one break up from that?
This is what Arjuna asked Sri Krishna this morning. In the Gita, it's a very good question. So he says that abhyasena vairagyena. Go on doing it. You may say it's all right. Doesn't matter. Do it again. And vairagyena. Gradually, make an effort to come out of it, but also at the same time have vairagya, detachment. By these two methods, ultimately, over a period of time, you wash it out.
And
you constantly make an effort. Every time that you are led into a wrong action, you watch it and wash it out. Wash it out again. 7 times, 39 times, 7 times
78.
This is abhyasa. Go on doing it. Go on doing it. Without despondency. Don't be despondent. It only shows that there is a nature which has grew, how difficult it is. When we want to lift ourselves, we have to realize that our nature is groomed in so many agreements, and to lift the whole thing is a very difficult task. So we should not be despondent. It takes time. All right.